All right, so we have Daryl, who is the father of rapper Draco the Ruler, who passed away how long ago?
December 21, December 18th, 2021.
And this is your his brother?
This is his
Yeah,
brother.
I'm the older brother.
Lorenzo?
I'm Lorenzo, but my artist name is Stickman. A lot of people know me by Stickman.
Stickman, okay, cool. Were you his father pretty much throughout his childhood?
Well, okay, so on and on, I was the dad there until, me and the mom kind of got in a little bitter situation. So you already know how that goes. Now I gotta punish the dad. You're not gonna be coming around, if you don't wanna pretty much abide by, how that the game goes, the rules of the mom or whatever. So it got kind of bad to where it was just too much. It was too much just drama in front of the kids, and it just wasn't good. So, I stepped away from it. I didn't want them to see that, like that. The type of violence was, the verbal abuse and stuff in a household. And not to throw her under the bus, but she was really bad. So I couldn't deal with it. So then at that particular time, I figured that Draco was around about 6 years old and his brother was around about four. And, I still would make my efforts every, come around and, Christmas, give them their things and do stuff for them and all of that. And it still was the same thing, a lot of drama making it hard for me. So they ended up having to be raised a little bit, the majority of the time by the mom.
Especially when they got like in the teen years and stuff, because there was a point like where we were like we would hear like stories like, oh, we saw your brother on this street, so we would like go on a hunt. We just hop in the car. My dad would say, "Let's go. We go right now." Well,
Tell
you
me
know,
where
my
they are, where you
homeboy
see
just
them
said he
at.
saw him on Vermont
Yeah,
somewhere.
yeah, yeah.
So we, my dad's like rushing us, pressing us to, get in the car and go. So now we're like freaking going crazy trying to find our brothers,
That was here in South Central?
Yeah, we was in South Central. Because I was off 107th in Normandy, right there. My auntie owned the duplexes over there. So I lived off of 107th in Normandy, in between Normandy and Bella.
What kind of kid was Daryl?
Oh, he was the interesting kid. The same smile, the same kid that the world seen as the rapper. He was always trying to be the guy. He wanted to be that guy. He stayed in my studio. Like, I had the studio in one of my, I turned one of my other bedrooms in the house into the studio. So he was always in there just watching everything I'm doing. Like, "Dad, what is this?" I was like, "Son, this is the MPC." "What's the MPC?" I said, "Well, this is where you sample stuff off the records." He would just learn, try to learn as much as he could being himself, but always showed that leader type of, he always showed that leader type of energy. He was that, and like what, as well as like if you kind of sized him up, his brother was more the one that watched everything. Devontae, he would watch everything, but Daryl wanted to learn everything. Daryl wanted to learn everything. Yeah, he was something else. That
Tell me
kid.
a story. Tell me, share some of your memories.
Okay, here's one of this is my best
I
story.
think I
Right,
know where this is going.
this is my best story. So he's 5 years old. And so Daryl's 5 years old, and Daryl's like, "Okay, man, you know what?" His mom used to always walk him to the donut shop. It was Kendall's. It was a donut shop on the corner of Century and Normandy. And his mom would always walk him up there. That was her routine thing. She would get up, and take her exercise and walk Daryl. So he knew how to get there from my house. Mind you, I'm on 107th. So that's what? That's five blocks up the street. You got to cross the main streets and everything to get to the donut shop. So at 5 years old, this is how you knew this kid was like, when he sang that song, he jumped off the porch. Remember that song? He said he jumped off the porch in the yard. He's not lying. So at 5 years old, he decide he's going to go to the donut shop. "Don't ask us nothing or anything. I'm going to the donut shop." So I'm like, "Darlene, where's Daryl at? I don't see him in the house." And I went out there because I used to always play in the tree in the front. Remember the big tree? So you was little
That
too
was the
back
spot
then.
right there.
So I said, "Daryl," I said, "no, he's not in the tree. The other kids are there. He's not there." And she's like, "What do you mean he's not there?" I said, "He's not there. He's not in the room. Where is he?" So anyway, we couldn't find him. hour went by, we couldn't find him. So we got this point, we got to call the cops. Boy, we called it over there. At that time, it was the sheriff's over there.
He was how old?
Five. He was five. So at this time, we called the sheriff. So, you know, the helicopter's looking for him. They got the Amber Alert and everything. All the cars is running around. Mind you, this kid then walked all the way up there from remembering his mom all the way to the donut shop. And he's there. And the lady at the donut shop, because she knows the mom, she's like, boy, where's your mom at? She's at home. Where is your dad? He's at home, too. How did you get here? Oh, I came down here. I want to get a glaze and a cinnamon twist. He talking about he want a glaze and a cinnamon twist. She said, boy, where's your mama? Is that where all them police is running around here? Yeah. And the Amber Alert, look, they looking for you. Stay right here, you know. So then she went out there and waved the cops down. Are you guys looking for this kid? And they like, yeah. So they ended up looking for him. So that story is very true when he put that in one of his songs that he jumped off the porch at an early age. And Lord forbid when I taught them the candy game. Yeah. I shouldn't have never did that.
That was probably the best.
Because they was like, Dad, how can we make some money? I'm like, boy, what do you guys need money for? You don't have no bills, no responsibilities. You don't need any money like that. You live a carefree life. Your parents take care of you. I just want some money. I said, well, what do you want to buy? He said, I want to get me some money and buy me some stuff. Okay, I said, well, I could tell you what you guys could do. You could get you some candy from Smart and Finals. You know, I taught them a little game, buy the candy for a cheap price, right? And then they would sell it. I think they would double it. You know, maybe they'd probably buy the candy bars for 80. I don't know what they were back then, but they would double their money.
You used to be able to get like four candy bars for like maybe $2. Like, yeah. Because I'm the oldest. So I was the first person to like go out and really start selling. And I was like, so everything, yeah, I would go out. I'm like begging them, like, can we go out? You know,
I should have never taught you guys that. So anyway, with Durrell mm-hmm. was the type of kid, he wake me up every morning, Dad, can I go to the gas station and sell some candy today? I'm like, why did I used to put my hand on my head, like, why did I show this kid how to do this, bro? Mm-hmm. And so he did that for a long time, making money every day. What was he buying with it? I don't know, man. What a kid. Space buying all kinds of junk, more candy probably.
So there were signs early on that he was
hustle, the hustle and the grind, it was there. And I'm going to do it the whole attitude, I'm going to do it my way, it was there since 5 years old.
Where did you get that from?
I think he probably watched me and a lot of stuff that I was doing. Because, you know, back then I had the whole full studio in the house. Man, I was doing music when they had ADATs. Now, you would know that what those were, ADATs and the 2-inch reel. I was doing music way back then. So, you know, it kind of flipped over to the MPC where they were sampling the records. I was doing music through that era, too. All the way up to now, I'm still doing it with the AI.
So he got involved in gangs in the hood?
Okay, so now that little transpire and that little flip to the story is when, you know, the kid, he's finna turn 11, 12 years old. He's getting bigger. He's getting stronger. You know, and then the streets start calling you, especially when that dad is not right there in the house. Boy, go sit your butt down. No, what y'all coming over my house for? You guys go. He ain't coming out today. When that's not there and the mom is there, you know what I mean? Moms do a great job, so this is not bashing mothers. Mothers do a great job with kids, but it's just that it's a difference when a dad say, no, you're not going, sit down, go in the room.
Or when you got two parents.
Yeah, when you got two parents in there, then it's definitely going to be more structure for the children.
Right.
But when it's one parent and you got the hard heads that's living out in the street, man, just look. When your mom go to sleep, bro, just, you know what? They got all kind of tactics. You know teenagers. They got all the tactics. So the bottom line to that is, moving forward, he overrid his mom's perimeter. And they start figuring out ways to get around mom saying no. And they would, and that's when they start getting caught up in the streets, man. You know, like I said, at this point, the schools were looking for me. Junior and elementary school, the schools were looking for him. And they're like, well, where's his dad at? Does anybody know how to contact his dad? So they ended up finding me when I was staying in Carson. And that's when I used to call him up and say, anywhere you see them at, let me know so I can, I used to go and pick him up like Renz. Okay, I'm gonna come get you, man. We're gonna go looking for them. Because I wanted to literally take them. I wanted to take him because a lady at the school, which, you know, not to throw Darlene under the bus, she was like, look, do you both have custody of these kids? And I said, no, neither one of us have legal custody. She said, well, you know, why don't you just come pick them up from the school? And when the mom gets here, I'll just tell her that the dad came and got them. That's exactly what I did. So I got them. That's how I ended up getting them back. And at this time, we were staying in Harbor City. Mm-hmm. Remember?
Yeah.
I stayed in Harbor City.
That's when you used to host the dance contest and stuff for all the kids.
So I had them for 7 months. But here we go back to the story you asked me earlier. Him being the smart kid. That him and that damn Devontae, bro, which is Ralphie the plug at this point, and Draco the ruler is Daryl. So I had them. And so one day I had put them in school over there and everything. They were going to school and they were doing good. And I'm not going to lie. I was a disciplined type father. So I whooped them if they got out of line to get them straight. You know, I whooped them. So they were in line. They was everything. Man, I went to the school to go pick them up from school. And the lady said, I said, where are the kids at? And the lady was like, they left. I thought you came and got them at 12 at lunchtime. They left at lunchtime. I'm like, what do you mean they left at lunchtime? I said, lady, where's my kids at? Those two little smart rascals, the little rascals, what I call them. Those two, boy, they are, because they had already knew how to ride the bus and all of that from when they was ditching school and all of that stuff with their mom. So they already knew how to get on the trains, get on the bus. They knew how to, the school told me that they was catching them downtown and the shopping areas. The truant officers was catching them way down there shopping at the shopping centers. And they said they would catch them with a lot of money. I'm like, well, what do you mean shopping centers? Where did they get the money from to be? He said, we'd be catching them kids. We catch them. They have like $200. One of them have $200 on them. The other one have like $75 on them. And we would, you know, the truant officers would get them back to the mom and, you know, they would run off again and get on the train. So I guess they knew how to ride the bus is the moral to that story. When they jumped on the train and the bus and found their mom, which she was standing on the east side. Hmm. Remember? She was standing on the east side over there off of 40-something.
Now that I don't remember.
Yeah, she was standing over there. So they knew how to get back to their mom. And at this time, this particular time, Daryl was about 11 and Devontae was about 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And gangs were something all three of your sons got into, or?
Well, I would say that Daryl and Devontae definitely got into groups, which the system in society is going to say that was a gang. They're going to say that was a gang. But let them say it. It was a music group.
Yeah. Officially, they weren't from a gang. They just from the streets.
From the streets. But they're going to consider that a gang. I'm just going to keep it real, bro. They're going to consider that the gang because of the type of stuff, trouble he was getting into and the stuff that he was doing.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. Society and the judicial system and all of that. But, like, mm-hmm. you know, as far as, like, what the streets will refer to him, the streets are going to say that, he's a hustler, out there getting money.
So you can kind of like spin it the way you want to spin it. People are going to look at it different ways, but I would say that they were just overriding it. But remember, they was getting into trouble that they shouldn't have been getting into, period, regardless.
Selling drugs or?
They was doing something to make money because, like I said, when they was catching them with all kinds of money. The teacher was telling me. So that's why I made it a big priority, man, to try to get them and change their life around immediately. I was watching, waiting for them to do little things. Daryl always hiding stuff up under the bed. I'm like, what do you keep on hiding up under the bed, bro? I picked the whole mattress up off the bed. I'm like, watch out, bro. And I pushed him out of the way, and I picked the whole mattress up. It's tons of songs. He was writing raps. And I'm like, what is this stuff that you're writing? And he was bashful. He was quiet. He didn't want to say. I guess he was ashamed. They were songs. He started writing songs then. At that time, when we was over there in Harbor City, he was hiding them, stuffing them up under the bed. So that was in him to do that. But yeah, as far as the trouble and stuff, I would definitely say it was definitely a group of people he was hanging around with that was the wrong crowd. Because I would have never allowed none of that. I would have ran all of them off.
And he eventually ended up doing some time in prison?
Yeah, he ended up doing, 3 years in prison. He ended up doing like 3 years in prison because it was steps. You know how the steps you climb? He went to juvenile hall, right? And he got the feel for the juvenile hall. Slap on the wrist. Then he moved up to the county jail. Slap on the wrist, right? Then he ended up in prison. So he ends up in prison, and he's fighting for his life at this time because they was trying to give him the rest of his life in prison. That was attempted murder, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the last one. But he had went to jail like I want to say, I can't remember the specific.
Because you were going to court.
Yeah, I can't remember the specific date, but there was a point where he was on fire. And then, like,
this is once he grown up, like Stink Ting.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He's talking about like going to jail and all of that. So I was just saying, like, mm-hmm. there was a point where he was on fire doing music, mm-hmm. and then he went to jail, mm-hmm. and then I think he did like two years or something like that. Mm-hmm. Then he got back out, and then got back in trouble again, and that's when they started trying to put all of the big charges on him and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Luckily, yeah. he ended up beating it.
You know, it took him a couple of years.
Yeah, that was a
murder. And then how did the music thing start?
So, like I said, I believe the music started when I used to catch him hiding the wraps up under the bed. Now, once they got back to the mom and they did the shake move on me, and they got back to the mom, then it turned into, okay, well, let's start making songs about the stuff we doing. You know, all of these little bad things we're doing, we're going to start making. Since we the baby kids, we're going to write songs about all the bad things that we're doing. And that's where that came in, at the whole flock and you know, all of these things that he's talking about in the songs. Yeah, he started talking about all of that out blast. Because I remember once he got older and he had got out of jail, this is, hey, when he first got out of prison, he came to my house and he was like, Dad, you got any beats for me? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, man, I got a bunch of songs. That's all I did all day long, was just make music, make beats all day. So I had hundreds and hundreds of beats. And so I said, I gave him a stack of CDs. It was like about 30 CDs. Yeah, it was about 30 CDs. And it all had about maybe 10 or 15 different type of beats that you could, you know, rap, instrumentals you could rap to or whatever. And I honestly, I didn't think he was going to do anything with them until I heard one of the songs on the radio. I'm like, wait a minute. That's the song that I gave him. And that was the song he did, Big Bang Buddha.
One of his most popular songs.
Yeah, he did. He turned that instrumental into a hit. You know, like I say, DJ Mustard put a little spin on it. He added some drums to it. But, you know, like I said, that's what any good producer would do. I mean, if somebody would give me a beat, I'm going to do what I could do to make enhance it and make it better. So I don't see any faultiness. You know, a lot of people come up to me, man, you should be getting paid off that, man. DJ Mustard, he said he made the beat, and actually, I'm like, bro, look, I gave it to my son. I would have did the same thing DJ Mustard did to enhance it, because my name is behind it now. You know what I mean?
Right.
My name is behind it, so I got to make this the best. The best is going to be. And so now Daryl's, he's booming, you know, he's booming. He's got, you know, he got so, doing all kinds of stuff, tours and stuff, and it's starting now. The jealousy is kicking in. Now the jealousy. That's when Everybody Get Dough. What's the song he did?
Mr. Get Dough.
Yeah. That was the next song. That one blew up really, really big. Mr. Get Dough song. He added a lot. DJ Mustard added a lot of good, talented rappers on there. I think it was RJ.
Yeah, they had 10 Summers.
They had 10 Summers. They had RJ on there, and they had different rappers. But mind you, all of these rappers are getting in with Daryl, and everything is cool and everything is fine, but it's also a lot of jealousy kicking in, and a lot of, because his name is starting to ring all around the city. So
jealousy from other people.
Yeah, jealousy from other most of it was other guys in the rap industry. Because you got to understand, once Daryl became who he was, especially when he did that thing, which I'm gonna tell you about, when he did that thing with Rolling Loud. Now these guys are getting put on they're getting set down and put on the back burner, you know? And they like, wait a minute, hold up. So they was doing little things, you know what I'm saying, to let him know, bro, either we getting in with you, you know what I mean? Or, you know, because you can't be bigger than the program. I guess that's what the message was. You can't be bigger than the program. And at this point right now, I think that they thought that he was bigger than the program, and we're going to have to show you that you can't be bigger than the program. So, like I said, the jealousy and the envy start kicking in, coming from different groups. Because you got to understand, before that incident happened to him, you got to understand that a group already tried to get him at the Rolling Out.
They did?
Yeah. They tried to get him at the Rolling Out. They just couldn't get him at the Rolling Out. The reason why they couldn't get him at the Rolling Out was because Rolling Out wasn't set up like what was 10 Summers. They had different security.
No, you're talking about Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time, yeah, sorry about that. It was set up differently, and they couldn't get to him like that. And so by the time the moves that they made to try to get, because actually the first attempt to get him was at Rolling Loud. That's what a lot of people don't know. They tried to get him there first, but they couldn't because the way the security was set up. And I got total big details from people that was, yeah, I know.
And what was Daryl's relationship like with you guys when he was?
When he was big, moving all around and everything, because he's still. I was just speaking to someone the other day, and she was telling me that he was asking him, telling her all the time, "Hey, you know what? I wonder what my dad is doing." And you tell her, my other son Kevin, "Is my daddy getting any more tattoos on him?" And just, you know, trying to figure out what's going on with me. But at this time, he's so big. You know what I mean? He's moving all around. He ain't answering his phone. He's doing all of this stuff. His Uber driver, he paying the Uber driver $1,500 a day to just live at his mansion with him. I'm like, you know what, bro? This is crazy. Because he wanted my other son, Kevin. KC the Truth, yeah. My other son, Kevin, he wanted him to move in the mansion with them, which is their brother, too. And I was like, Kevin was telling me that Daryl was calling him all the time. He said, "Man, I don't know, man. I'm just not feeling comfortable, man." Something, he said, "Why don't you and your girl just move in the mansion with me?" That's when he had was that the mansion in Beverly Hills?
I think so.
Yeah, he had the mansion out there, and he was telling my other son.
Where was that house?
Huh?
Where was the mansion?
In Beverly Hills.
Beverly Hills.
Yeah, so he was telling them, he was telling my other son that he wanted him and his girl to move in there. And I told him, I said, "Kevin, look, if he's telling you that, something's going on, and he's indirectly crying out for some help, and he's not trusting something." Now, we don't know the whole full detail, but I mean, people that got some brains, right, and can figure out some things that had to be either some surrounding type of things or something, because he was trying to get my other son, and he told us, "Man, no, man, you just bring your girl. She can move in too." And my other son, you know how kid, you know, you was like that too, Renz. All my sons are the same way. "No, man, I got to get my stuff on my own, man. I don't want to make it seem like I need to go through somebody else to come up in life." I'm like, bro, if you got
very much like that.
If you, bro, your brother, he's rich. He's doing the music that you're trying to do. Maybe he got some ways to pull you in and help you. That's the way I seen it as being the dad. You can use that as a stepping stone to get faster to where you're going. But all of them had that same attitude. This one right here, Kevin, Nathan, all of them. Because I have 10 sons. So they all had that same attitude. "Nah, man, we don't want to make it seem like we're riding off of him." I'm like, bro, you're not riding off of him. That's your brother. That's your brother. And you guys are supposed to help each other. So anyway, man, Kevin didn't go. And this was 2 weeks before he died. So what am I saying? If Kevin had a win over there, this might not have happened. No, but what I am saying is maybe Kevin would have seen something that he could have talked to him about, and he could have, you know, put it in his head like, "Nah, man, I don't think that's a smart move," because he's already trusting the fact to want you to move in there as the little brother. So I said, "Bro, you should have went when your brother was crying out for you like that, bro. You should have went. You should have moved in with him, man. You should have moved in with your brother. You should do all of that, what you talking about. You should have moved in with your brother." Because it wasn't nothing, but 2 weeks later, he was dead. And matter of fact, Rolling Loud was, that was the 12th.
I'm not.
Yeah, sure. That was the 12th. The Rolling Loud, I think that was the 12th of December. So what was it? 6 more days was the 18th. He did the Once Upon a Time. That was 6 days later. And he was dead. So if you do the math on all of that, Kevin, he telling Kevin to get over there 2 weeks before that. Then he does the Rolling Loud, and he literally said with his mouth, hey, they tried to get me. He said it. He said they tried to get me at Rolling Loud, but they couldn't. They tried to get me at Rolling Loud, but they couldn't get me at Rolling Loud because the security was too deep. And at that particular time, there was a big group, too. It was a lot. It was a lot of people, too. From what I heard, it was a bunch of guys, like 50, 60 guys. But they couldn't get to him. Yeah, so.
Lorenzo, what did you see changes in your brother throughout this period?
So, throughout this period, well, first of all, I like to state, like, the relationship between my brother kind of, like, so from about, like, teenager till up until this time, I kind of give you that small gap. So, basically, there was a point of time to where, like, we didn't know where they were. And then there was like a few years after that, and then all of a sudden they pop up on Facebook. I think either my sister or one of my brothers popped up on Facebook. I'm like, oh damn, like, you know, we've been looking for them. They've been, you know, kind of like missing. Everybody's been kind of missing, but social media kind of connected us. So that was kind of how we reconnected after a few years. Cause we were saying earlier, we would go on these missions just looking for them, you know, trying to see where they're at. You know, maybe we heard where they might be. But anyways, so once we reconnected, I was trying to hang out with them, you know, try to build a relationship, you know, because it's like, man, that's my brothers, you know, that's my family. You know, I know that, you know, we haven't seen each other for a while, but, you know, I'm trying to bridge that gap. So I would, I would hit up Daryl, like, hey, man, you trying to hang out? Like, I'm checking to my sister's house so you can, you know, we could all hang out as a family. And I was like, yeah, tell Devontae, you know, let's get together. And Daryl, he would always be the one, like, down. He's ready to roll. Yeah, he's down. He's ready to ride. He don't care where we going. So Daryl be ready to roll. I'm like, where's Devontae? You know, I pull up, I'm like, where's Devontae? Devontae, he'll just be chilling. He'd be in his own zone, doing his own
always
thing.
Always quiet and studying everything.
And I would respect that because, you know, like, it was kind of like trying to rekindle and you're like, I'm doing my own thing. Y'all do y'all thing. So
Devontae was like that. He was always the one that watched everything Kevin did. So everything Kevin did, Devontae would just kick back like this and just watch him. And maybe that was his way of learning.
You mean Daryl?
Devontae was the one watching Daryl. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. So yeah, it was like that. And then next thing you know, man, this guy is like getting bigger and bigger. He's like a star at this point. It's like, you know, I'm driving down the street. I'm at the red light. I'm hearing his music playing in more than one car. I hear a song playing in the car on this side. And then there's a song. They playing another song in this car. That's when the 10 Summers album came out. They were playing his music everywhere. Next thing you know.
You were proud of him?
Yes. Okay. I was really. I used to hear the song that I used to hear the music that I gave him. And he turned that one into a hit. I used to hear that all the time in Riverside. They was playing that all the time. I'd be at the red lights, cars pass by, they pull up to the into the Food for Less in the parking lot, the cars be playing Draco, you know, they be playing Big Bang Buddha. I'm like, oh man, this is really good. It made me feel good, you know, like, you know, my son really used this music and that, you know, it was cool. So should being the leader Duro is, he jumped started that to a whole nother level. Now he finna make the stink team bigger. It ain't finna just be the regular dudes, the stink team. And that's when he added in Duffy and Peso. Those were my favorite rappers that they added in. Duffy and Peso, OTM. And
but Dad, before you get there, let me finish giving my interaction with Daryl. So that they can kind of have that cemented.
Okay.
And then we can go from there. So, yeah, I would try to pick them up and stuff. So I finally was able to pick them up. We'll pick Daryl up. And one thing that always stands out to me and be a, so there was a, and this is how I knew, like, he was always kind of forward thinking and what he wanted. Mm-hmm. He's a very independent thinker. So I remember one time I picked him up and we just driving, and I'm like, you can roll down the window if you want, you know. So he rolls down the window, then he just looks me in the eyes and he's like, man, I'm about to get me a Maserati. I'm like, this is random, like, just a random, like, I hadn't, you know, we hadn't really spoken a long time, and then he just looks me in the eyes and just like, man, I'm about to get me a Maserati. You know, I'm like, I was like, do your thing. I was like, yeah, you should. You know what I'm saying? Do your thing. But that just made me think like, oh yeah, he like, you know, he always wanted more. He always saw himself as more. But
facts.
So yeah, we was able to, you know, start making a relationship, and then it got to the point where he started going to jail.
Yeah.
Now that got tricky. So you know, I was working a lot. I was also playing sports. I went to college for football. I had a Division I scholarship to New Mexico. So yeah, it got to a point to where, you know, when I would come in town, I would try to like go to a court date or two, one or two, you know, try to like show up for him. And then the, you know, over the years, because it started doing more, he started doing multiple years, it kind of like started, things started kind of getting distorted in between time. Mm. So it was hard to like keep up with him, but I did show up, you know, to the court dates to just let him know, like, man, I'm here for you. You know, my actions are speaking louder than my words. And then, you know, eventually, yeah, and they would call sometimes, they would call as sometimes I'd be, they would be calling my sister or something like that. And I'm like, give me the phone, you know? And then I would, man, what's up, man? What you doing? Like, what's going on? You're like, you good in there? You know, just making sure I kind of keep that conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, man, keep your head up. I know that sound, you know, kind of cliche or whatever, but keep your head up, man. Keep fighting, you know, keep your head, stay writing, you know, mm-hmm. stay writing, keep yeah, writing.
He was doing that. He made like 500 songs in jail.
And he did. And then it got to a point where he was out. When he got out the last time, that's when I felt like kind of communication was a little weird. Not weird because I feel like the communication was a little weird because he was just fresh out. You know, mm-hmm. he had did so much time in solitary confinement.
Yeah, they had him in there for 10 months.
Yeah, they was trying to crush. You know, they was trying to crush him.
They was trying to break him. They had him in there for 10 yeah. months. He said he told me that he told me mm-hmm. that he felt like he was going crazy.
Yeah,
he felt like the walls were closing in on him.
Yeah,
he had been in solitary confinement for so long
yeah.
that it seems like after a while, like after 6 months, it seemed like the walls started closing in on him.
Yeah.
So it really kind of affected him because he did have a bad – his attitude was changed. And then, you know, when you get out of jail, mm-hmm. the first thing you're going to think, okay, nobody was down for me.
Yeah.
That's everybody that goes to jail. Yeah. Every prisoner that go to jail, listen, you know, yeah. it's like this, bro. When you guys are out and you're doing what you do, mm-hmm. you know, living this fast life, you're not going around people neither. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's the life kind of like to me, you chose that. You know, it's not like you were running around when you had all the money and all of that. So it's a part of the life. When you mm-hmm. when you live that life like that, I was, like I said, I was a strict dad. I would never teach my kids to take that route because I'm always, you know, my mother's child. You reap what you sow. Yeah. And it's going to come back on you. And right when you think that it ain't going to come back on you, it's going to come back on you, just like these guys that did that to them.
Yeah.
It's going to come back on them.
I think
they're not going to get away with that.
I think what a lot of people underestimate is that when somebody's in prison or jail, like, people are living life on the outside too, just like people are living life in the
yeah.
inside. So it's like,
exactly.
you know, I'm stressed out too, and I'm on the outside, you know? So mm-hmm. I think sometimes, you know, everybody wants more than what you can give.
And it's,
from
it might
both,
be
from
more,
both points.
Honestly, being an older person,
yeah.
it might be more stressful for the people on the outside than the people on the inside.
Real talk.
We got real responsibilities.
Yeah, real talk.
We got rent. We got, you know, all of this stuff. We got real responsibilities. When you get set down, sometimes it actually might save your life.
Yeah.
Because let's look at this. Let's just say that they did give him a little bit of time. He'd still be alive.
Yeah, for sure.
So sometimes that yeah. sitting down is a little bit of structure for you. You know what I mean? So you can't look at it like, you know, the people on the outside got it good. No, how do we got it good? We got to pay for everything.
Right, we're stressed out too.
The only thing they're not charging us for is the air. Well, I'm not even sure about that.
Yeah.
Man. Why are you getting charged for the air?
Are we getting charged for the air? We getting charged for the water?
Yeah, we get charged for everything.
Oh, man.
So like I was saying, to spin that Frisbee back to that, then the Daryl started building an empire. Like, he started adding guys that were really talented. And one of them was Rimble.
Yeah.
He added the Rimble guy. Mm. Some guy from San Pedro, really talented young man, too. Shouts out to Rimble. And he added OTM. That's my favorite. Mm. That's Peso and Duffy. And then he was doing Big Sad. He was doing music with him, too. He wasn't part of the Distinct Team, but he was doing little projects and stuff with them.
Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, just recently, I just did a song with OTM, Duffy, and Peso. I just did a song with them about a month ago. And I was sitting at their studio apartment, and I was telling them, I said, bro, listen, you guys always talk about, you know, the gratitude and the love that you have for Draco the Ruler. I said, right now, if Draco the Ruler was here, if he's looking down at you guys, what do you think that he would admire that you would do? And they were just quiet. I said, I think what he would admire, what you guys would do, is get back together with Ralphie. Get back together with the Stink Team. Get back together, because they had, I guess once Ralphie took over the Stink Team, they had some issues.
Yeah.
They had some issues. And so kind of like maybe Ralphie was going through a lot too because his brother died, but Ralphie separated from everybody. So, and I don't know, I don't know if it went like that, but y'all ain't in the group no more. You ain't in the group no more. No, it's just going to be me and who I say. So they broke up and it got really bitter to where they were saying things about each other, and OTM was saying things about the Stink Team and their songs and rap beefing, and Stink Team was saying stuff about OTM, and then it got jumped on Rimble. Then they was quarreling with Rimble, and all of these guys, mind you, when Draco was alive, all of these guys were together and they were doing really good.
Yeah.
When Ralphie took over the Stink Team, then they all broke up. So when I was at the studio apartment, I told him, I said, bro, I think you guys should put all that jealousy and that hate aside. This is my opinion, I told him. Put all that jealousy and all that hate aside and all the small stuff. And I said, and all you guys should get back together. Even Big Sad. I think all you guys should do songs together. I gave him an example. I said, what if you guys did a concert and all of y'all were together? Because right now, you guys split up all the fans. Y'all split all the fans. The fans is going over here. Some of them is going with Rimble. Some of the fans is going over here with OTM. Some of the fans, you know, Big Sad already had his fans, and he got his fans. But what if y'all start doing concerts and you guys put all of that dumb stuff aside and all of y'all get together? And they was like, Peso and Duffy was like, you know what, Pops, you're right. Hey, man, they said, man, we ain't got no problem with Ralphie. We don't have no problem with the Stink Team. I said, man, well, you know what I'm saying? The next time you guys are around him, or if you guys are, you know, you bump into him or whatever, just let that be known, man. And you guys, sure enough, man. About 3 days later, it started posting all over Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. They got back together. So that was a good thing. They got back together. And actually right now, they're doing really good. So right now, I guess I would say the top. Who do you think is the top? OTM right now at this point?
You mean
like you know, shining in the industry?
As far as LA, like
how Daryl was, I would say OTM is doing good, bro.
They're doing great. I like both of them dudes. I think they're doing great. They're shining, mm-hmm. and also I feel like they do a really good job of holding it down. For
keeping his name alive.
Yeah, for keeping his name alive, keeping the truth alive, as they say.
But I really couldn't see that when they were all split up and quarreling and fighting. So I had to fix that. I deliberately went out my way to fix that. So I'm glad. I'm really glad. And I know that Daryl, wherever, you know, he's saying, yeah, he's smiling about that, because that's what he would have wanted, man. You know, that's what he would have wanted, because that's the way it was when he was alive.
Yeah, and it's that saying, you know, there's strength in numbers, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, the family is stronger together, no yes. matter what.
Yes.
And that's why, I was always one, and still to this day, you know, we don't have the most amazing relationship with certain people in the family, but mm-hmm. you know, I feel like time heals everything. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the things and mantras I kind of stick by. Is time heals everything. Sometimes you got to give time time.
Right.
So I think that, you know, as a family and then everybody connected to the family, I'm just looking forward to everybody kind of like.
Yeah, you've always been
saying
that.
You know, honing in. Like.
Yeah, you've always been saying that.
Yeah, because you, I mean, that's, mm-hmm. like I always say, like, at the end of the day, this is my blood, you know? And mm-hmm. what I notice is, like, people may wither away. You know, your friend may wither, a relationship, boyfriend, girlfriend, they may wither away. But, man, your family, mm-hmm. they might hate you for a little bit, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, they still gonna be there.
Yeah.
You know, they might hate you. They might love you. It might be off and on. But at the end of the day, this is my bloodline.
Yeah.
You know, I got a nephew. I got mm-hmm. a niece. You know, so
that's true.
I look at things like that from that perspective. And I just.
Well, you are the oldest brother.
Yep. I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest brother. So. You yeah. know, you see things on a mature level. Because, I mean, you got to understand, it takes time for people to mature, too. I mean,
yeah.
They got all that money. They living fast. Yeah. And so money is kind of dictating a lot of their personalities. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It took me a long time to, you know, mature.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like.
They need to put that. That's why I said they need to put that little thing. Ralphie need to put that little. Ralphie needs to put that little quarrel and big sad thing. They need to squash that, bro.
Mm-hmm.
They can get more money.
I think they're gonna be all right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
if they haven't already did it.
Yeah, you know the internet will blow something up. Yeah, and we be thinking one thing, and
nah.
they hugged up, you know, dapped up, everybody doing
yeah.
their thing.
Yeah.
But
so there's a lot of speculation about what happened the night.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah,
Draco lost his life. Tell me about what you guys think.
Well, like I said earlier, before. It was definitely envy and jealousy, and it was the jealousy and the envy was because their numbers were going down and his was coming up. So pretty much, I don't even think it was something that Draco was trying to do, but he was taking and moving everybody out of their slots. And while he's moving them out of their slots, he's moving up. He's moving all the way up, and that was envy. That was envy because, you know, a few people asked him from different groups to sign with their labels and pretty much not just like everybody thinks it was one story where this group right here asked Durrell to sign with the label and he turned him down. No, he turned down at least four different big groups and record labels and stuff. So it could be that too. You know, he turned down some big people. And like I said, a lot of people started thinking that he was figuring that he was bigger than the program. You know, and so we're going to show you that you're not bigger than the program. So that didn't just stem from, like everybody put out there, this particular person that he got into it with, which everybody knows who I'm talking about. That wasn't just it. It was the climb, and the climb where you are and to stay where you are, you got to make some of us a part of that. And if you don't make some of us a part of that, we're going to have to, you know what I'm saying, let you know that you're not bigger than the program. And Durrell had that attitude. Remember the kid that left at 5 years old to go to the donut shop? Now, I'm doing what I want to do. You're not going to tell me what I can do. I'm going to the donut shop. Something. He's a grown man now, so what? I'm not signing with y'all. What you going to do? Well, you guys want a war? We're going to have a war. You catch me in the street? Just make sure that you ain't slipping either. We just going to be watching our back because I'm not signing with anyone. I make my money in the streets. And, you know, the type of money that they was trying to, dump off on him to get him to say he was making that money in the streets. So he felt like, why should I sign with you guys? I can get that type of money out of the streets, regardless of my rap stuff. You know, so he didn't want to sign. So a lot of them felt like he is thinking that he's bigger than the program, so we need to show him that he ain't. So that to me is just envy and jealousy. He don't got a sign with y'all.
Yeah, I think also it's safe to say, like you said, it's all speculation because there's no definitive like storyline in that regards. But mm-hmm. you know, these are the things you kind of put together from the story that we know. you know. So yeah, I also wanted to just, you know, make that a statement. But as far as how I feel about it, I think to kind of piggyback on what my dad was saying a little bit, he was very successful independently.
Yeah.
And not only people, but corporations, you know, I want a piece too. Like my dad said, when you're doing something that big at that level, it's kind of like, well, we need a piece too. I think everybody kind of want a piece, not just one organization or one organization. Like, everybody want a piece, you know. You can't do it by yourself, and I think that's where a lot of the I think that's where he gets a lot of like backing at. It's kind of like, man, you know, he's so successful, and he beat prison. He beat two murder charges.
Yeah.
So it, like my dad said, just in general, I think to be the man, it's kind of like the king of the hill. You know, when you're the king of the hill, no, we don't want to see. It's cool, you win, but not that long. It's like Tom Brady. Come on, man. you won again? You're 42?
Yeah,
and you
want to
get, you know, like, no, that's out.
And then you got to remember, you know, he's pushing all of these people out of the way that used to shine and get and have big numbers. He's pushing them on the in the back. And so, look, man, just make us a part of this. You know what I mean? And this, but I don't think that Durrell felt like they was being fair with their offers.
Yeah, I mean,
he just probably felt like they wasn't being fair with it. Because that's where I think it came back to, nah, man, I'm cool. I can just, you know, be independent, you know, keep on doing what I'm doing, you know. Now, would he have eventually signed with somebody from when I used to talk to him? I think he would have.
Yeah.
I think he would eventually definitely signed with somebody.
If the money was right.
But I can tell you this. Now, everybody's tripping off that story where, like, how he ended up doing the song with Drake.
Yeah.
When I used to catch Durrell hiding his wraps up under the bed and all of that stuff, a little bit shortly after that, but time right there, he would always be listening to Drake's music. Like, every time he have his phone or whatever, he's always listening to Drake's music. I said, you like Drake as an artist? He's like, yeah, Dad. He said, Dad, this is what he's trying to tell me. Mr. Write a Million Songs. He's trying to tell me, he said, Dad, you got to listen to the lyrics. He's like, Dad, you got to listen to the lyrics. You're not, and he would tell me, he would scold me, you're not listening to the lyrics. Listen to what he's saying, Dad.
Yeah.
He's always do that to me. Like, listen to what he's saying. I'm like, okay, you know. Okay, son, maybe I'm not paying attention. Let me listen to what Drake was saying. So he really did. That was probably a dream come true, because he really did admire Drake way before they did that song together.
It was organic.
Yeah, it was like, you know, these kid you watch Kobe Bryant, right, as a kid, and then you end up playing on the Lakers with him or something.
Yep.
That's how that was, because he used to always listen to Drake talking about, Dad, listen to the lyrics. It'd be like, boy, what?
Definitely got a lot of respect for Drake in regards to, you know, seeing the potential of my brother, and like, yeah, I really want to tap in with you and really actually, you know, given that, because that, I think that was Daryl's song, right? And he just like put a hook on it.
Yeah.
So like, that's, if that ain't love, I don't know what it is, because,
and who knows, maybe it's spent from that, because I mean, you know, because Kendrick and Drake got into the, you know, the rap beef thing, right?
Yeah, afterwards.
So now it's the battle of the West Coast, who's gonna have it. And you know, maybe a lot of people felt upset about the fact that, you know, he did the song with Drake. You know what I'm saying? Maybe they felt that he did the song with Drake. That's disrespectful to the West Coast. You know, he did this song with Drake, and, you know, the whole West Coast is kind of like warring with, you know, like, you know, with Drake, because,
well, that
of
was
Kendrick.
Afterwards, though, Dad.
Yeah, I know that was afterwards, but I'm saying, Durrell still did the song to Durrell still did that song with Drake.
Yeah.
So I'm saying a lot of people probably, I don't know.
They didn't like that.
They didn't like that.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, they didn't like it because, well, I just think a lot of people I won't say a lot of people didn't like it, but I would say it just make you feel uncomfortable when this freaking regular guy, he's like an independent guy, he's not signed to a major label, mm-hmm. he's a regular guy, mm-hmm. and he gets a Drake feature.
Yeah.
Like, what? You know, it just make you feel uncomfortable. It's like, you know, it's like a guy with a stench. It's like, damn. Like,
what do you guys think about YG being raided by the feds?
That's a good question.
Now, well, as a dad, I don't be wanting to pinpoint or pick anyone and say this person, that person, or that person. But what I am going to say, as being his father, anybody that had anything to do with that needs to be held responsible for that. That's how I'll put that. Anybody that has something to do with, anyone who had something to do with that need to be held responsible for that. Now, this is my, you know, people try to act like, you know, a dad is not supposed to mourn. A dad is not supposed to be upset. A dad is not supposed to, oh man, you know what? I'm cool on all that. If you or whoever, whoever you are, wherever you from, whatever your deal is, if you had something to do with murdering my son, you need to be held responsible for that. That's what I can say on that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have a comment on that.
No. I don't know who, I don't know who did it because I wasn't there. So I can't say, you know, I can't reply to that and say, okay, well, you know what? YG's house got raided or whatever happened with that situation. You know, I'm cheering with some pom-poms and, you know, and like a cheerleader. No, because I wasn't there. I don't know if YG had anything to do with that. And he's a responsible party that actually stabbed my son. But what I am saying is this. Whoever did do that need to be held responsible for that. Straight up. You know, it's just, it is what it is, man. It is what it is. You know, it is what it is. You know,
he was a remarkable young man.
Yeah, he was. And you know what? I don't understand because if like I don't know. Did you ever meet Draco?
No.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. If you would have ever met him, and you would have actually been around him and kind of like felt his energy, you see that he was a good kid. He always smiled. He always looked out like that whole stink ting thing. If Duro came up, they came up. It was never no selfish thing. It was never no, oh, I got all the money, I got all the fame. No, he made sure that he put them on the same level that he was on and made sure that they had what they needed. That's the type of purpose. So I don't understand where this envy and jealousy thing that people was having towards him, because he wasn't that type of person. And I will say that as a dad to everybody out there, Duro was not that type of person. He did not deserve to go like that. He just wasn't that type of person. He was a really good person with a good spirit, and he was down to help people and everything. That's how you know it was just jealousy and envy, bro.
Duro had a real special light surrounding him, and he really had a genuine charisma. Like, you could just see it, and it wasn't forced. He always just naturally was very, like my dad said, very joyful. He was always joking, laughing, you know. He'll swing on you, you know, and just, you know, make a joke. Like, you know, he was just very playful.
But a gangster.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's kind of like as a kid when you're looking into your brother and you just kind of, I'm the older brother, so I'm watching these little bad dudes. You know, running around, swinging on each other, making, you know.
Just tell them a story about when you went over there. Remember, you went over there, and they with that. You want to talk about that?
When he pulled out the gun?
He's a bad kid. So at the same time.
I went to go visit my sister, and obviously my brothers were there, too, because they all lived together. It was like her prom or something. And
Ivory?
Yeah, it was like her prom, and she was getting ready or whatever. But anyways, I went over there. You know, they all, It's a whole gang of them. Like, they, you know, they really hang out. So they was all homied up. And I remember I just went over there, you know, big brother, I'm beating everybody in the game, playing NBA 2K and everything. You know, we all just talking crap. He was talking about my earrings. Why you got two earrings? You know, he's just a jokester. And he got style. So, like, you know, he going to feel like if you ain't as fresh as him, then, you know, why you got them two earrings in? That's out. Like, you know, he just clowning. Crazy. But anyways, there was one point where he just in the backyard with this freaking, he got this big ass gun, you know, and he walked by me like, I'm like, but you better get out of my face with that. And he's like, well, she is like, I'll shoot you. I'm like, bitch, I'll smack you, know. It's just like, it's kind of like, it's just like, that's my little brother. He just talking shit like, that's my little brother, you know. Like, get your ass out of my face, you know, before I smack your up.
No cap in his songs. Everything in his songs.
Yeah, he was a real street dude. Yeah,
everything in his songs that he talked about, he's a real street dude. He really decay. Because that was a K then, wasn't it?
That was a K.
What are you doing? I would have been like, what are we doing right now? Yeah. What are we doing? Go put that. Just, you know.
I thought it was funny just to kind of shoot the shit. But also, I'm like, I'm not scared of you. You the little bro. You know, like, I ain't scared of you. Jokester. Get your ass
always
out of my damn
Mr. Way. He was always Mr. That same smile at 5 years old is the same smile at the day he died. Exact same face. It's like his face didn't even change. He just got bigger. But he still had that same little kid face with the smile.
His son does the same thing.
Oh, yeah. That matter.
His son, Caden, is the same exact. He got the same spirit in him.
Yeah, and guess what? This is what's crazy. His son is at the same age. So his son comes over to my house on the weekends, on Sundays, and I'm teaching his son how to play the drums. And I'm teaching him how to play the drums and the keyboards and all of that. So I was just telling him, he came over last Sunday, right? And he said, Grandpa, he said, so how do you be making the songs and stuff like that? I said, well, just think of songs. I said, do you know your ABCs? He said, yeah, I know my ABCs. I'm 9. I said, well, let me hear them. Right, let me see if you really know your ABC. So he goes through ABCD. He does the whole thing. I said, see, that's your songs right there. You can make songs out of the ABCs. He said, what do you mean, Grandpa? I said, you can make songs out of the ABC. A, B, C, D. And he said, well, where does the drums come in? I said, so you're going to go A, B, C, D, E, you know, and I showed
him. Got you right there.
Yeah, so look, I showed him how to make the songs. Trust and believe me. The whole time he was there, the whole hour he was there, he would say, "Dad, Grandpa, can I go outside ride the scooter?" I said, "Yeah." He's on the scooter. I look at him. He go out here look for him. Right, this is Draco's son, and he's out there on the scooter. Tell me, A, B, C, D, D, A, B. I said, "You got to add," because I was teaching him peri-diddles. I was teaching him peri-diddles. So the peri-diddles is peri-ditto, peri-ditto. I said, now add some peri-diddles to that. A, B, C, D, peri-ditto, peri, A. And he learned it quick. He got on my drum set and he was singing the alphabets and he was adding the peri-diddles in there at the end. Like peri-ditto, peri-ditto, A, B. I'm like, okay, you learn it quickly, bro. So
that talent ain't
then
no
that
lie,
same,
man.
And you're right. That's why I brought that up, because he has that same smile the whole time. He just smiling just like Draco the whole time. He's smiling like him, man. He's another great kid. Yeah, he's
we
another
used to
great.
Just hang out in the studio when we were younger. Mm-hmm. All three of us. And this was before Kevin and Nathan. Like my dad said, we got 10 brothers and sisters. Oh, 11 brothers and sisters. But yeah, we used
12.
To just. It's somebody every day. It's somebody new every day. We got a little 14-year-old brother.
Two girls and 10 boys.
Or six. Oh, what is he, 16 now? Yeah. Jonathan. But yeah, we used to hang out in the studio all day. He would just, like, he ain't exaggerating. When he said he was making beats all day, literally, he'd be making beats.
I got
He's
like
playing
2,000
the instruments.
Songs.
He's doing everything.
I have like 2,000 songs easily right now.
Yeah.
I just, In the last 2 months, I made 86 songs.
Yeah, he's serious. You would think he's trying to get signed. Every time I talk to him, he's like, yeah, I just finished this song. I'm like, yeah, I just did me a little freestyle, you know. But I think that's what pushes me. Like, naturally because he's always creating. So it's like, yeah, like.
And I do that purposely because I want you to hear it. I want you to learn the different styles of music. You know, I don't want you just to be cloned and stuck to the hip hop box. You know, so because I mean, I do songs in every genre. My favorite genre of music is rock. I like rock and roll the best. Pop fusion and rock and stuff like that. And people like, you know, by me being a drummer, I've been playing drums over 50 years. So
he gets it from you.
Yeah, so yeah, I like 100%. Rock. I like hip hop, but that's not my top music that I like. I just feel like as a musician, I could do more with rock.
When people discover his music 20 years from now, what do you think? What do you hope they're going to hear?
If they're listening to Draco's music
in 20 years,
I think that it's going to stand out forever because he had his own style. Yeah. It's almost like Daryl made his own genre of music. Would you agree to that?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, everybody, now I can bring up YG's name. Now, YG was making the type of music that he was making at the time of his era, and it was really good music. Yeah. I like YG's music. I like the gangster music and all that. But when Daryl came in, Daryl made his own style of music, his own storylines. We're going to talk about, you know, driving in fancy sports cars and you know, foreign whip cars and crashing and wearing designer clothes and wearing new clothes and new different type of stuff instead of the pants sagging, the T-shirts, the Dickies.
The traditional West Coast rapper.
Gangster. Mm-hmm. He switched that and he changed that. And I think that's one of the reasons why he really became successful. So and from years from now, he's going to be ringing bells because he changed the whole West Coast.
Yeah.
He changed the whole West Coast.
From the wordplay.
Yeah.
You know, to
the lingo.
Yeah, the lingo. He actually had his own way that he talks.
Yeah.
And his slang.
The whole mumbling.
Yeah.
Before he comes into
You see kids that's from like 14 to like 30, and they all like trying to imitate him still to this day. He's been gone for almost, 5 years?
5 years.
And they're still trying to imitate him, even if it's slightly, you know?
And I don't find anything wrong with that.
Nah.
I don't find anything
wrong. That's hard
I mean, we all sung Michael Jackson songs back in the day. We sung Kiss rock songs back in the day. Everybody knew the words to them. So younger artists younger than them are going to try to mimic what they're doing. A lot of people see that, you trying to sell. No, man, that's if that's their favorite icon type of rap guy, right, or whatever, they're gonna do that.
I think it's going to be hard because I think it's hard to, like, erase who he was because it's like a generational talent. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like forgetting about Kobe. There'll never be another Kobe Bryant ever again. Michael Jordan ever again. There'll just never be another one of those. So I think it will be hard. It would be like, it's kind of like it probably won't happen for another 10 years, maybe 15, you know, that you'll just see an individual that I'm not doing it like this. I'm doing it my way.
Yeah, you know, rebel because a lot of people see the reason why it's like that, Renz, is because they feel like they have to go along with the flow because that's the only way they're going to get on.
Yeah.
If I don't go along with the flow and sound like this, that's what's going on. Daryl went against the odds, and he jumped out the box. You definitely got that from me. You know we born the same birth date and everything. Yeah. So he's junior, so yeah.
You guys had the same birthday?
Yeah.
Same name, same
I remember
birthday.
I asked Darlene, I said, well, when is his due date? And she, you know, I told you, we used to get into it. And this is where her words were. It was so funny, bro. I said, when is this due date? Oh, your motherfucking birthday. She said that. Oh, you remember, I can never forget that look in her face. I said, when is his birthday? When is your due date? Oh, your motherfucking birthday. That's when. Motherfucker. She said, on your motherfucking birthday, motherfucker. I was like, oh, man, his birthday's on my birthday. Yeah.
Yeah. Not our darling. She's a sweetheart.
Yeah, she can go slam the door and knock all the stuff out of the cupboards.
Daryl, let me ask you one last question. If somebody who had never heard of Draco asked you, who was your son, and you couldn't mention music or fame or the way he died, how would you describe him?
If they asked me who was my son, I would say a very, very high-spirited, joyful, good person that wanted to just give. That's what I would say. He was a person that wanted to give, and he definitely has special talents. Definitely has special talents. He's not who a lot of people think that he was. They judge him by, you know, videos and all of that. He was actually a great, 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 great person. Now, it's going to be some people out there that's going to, you know, they're going to contest that and be like, okay, you being biased because, you know, that's your son. But no, he was a good person. He was a good person. Yeah. He was a good person. Yeah.
All right, you guys. Thank you so much for sharing your stories and keep it up. Keep up the good work. Yeah, man. Thank you.
We do appreciate that because, I mean, my thing is,